Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. We believe small actions can have great impact. Take a small action today. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Now, the number of COVID patients receiving intensive care in our hospitals has almost doubled in just 1 week. This morning, there were 42 confirmed cases in intensive care here, up from 22 on Christmas Eve. In a letter to the Health Minister yesterday, the Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Houlihan, said the epidemiological situation is now the most concerning observed since the onset of the pandemic. Well, we're going to get an update now on how our healthcare system is coping with this surge. We're joined by Dr. Alan Gaffney, Vice President of the Intensive Care Society of Ireland and also Consultant in Intensive Care Specialist at Beaumont Hospital in Dublin. Philney Hay is General Secretary of the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation, and also we're joined by Dr. Ilona Duffy, Monaghan GP. And Ilona, I might come to yourself first because I know you obviously speak to COVID patients before they reach hospital, and this afternoon you tweeted that you were losing faith in humanity based on the calls that you've been getting today from patients. So can you tell us about those calls and what is it that is undermining your faith in humanity?
Well, I suppose that text was tweet was really put out as a sense of frustration and not meant to kind of maybe be so OTT sounding as maybe it does when I'm hearing it read out. But I have to say, today in our practice was the busiest day we have dealt with COVID presentations since the beginning of the COVID onslaught last March. And we've also seen the greatest number of COVID positive results. We've had 19 results, positive results back to our practice alone, which is massive. We've never had a day like it. But more of concern was the fact that on ringing people and talking to people, it was frightening to talk to people who had rung in who were symptomatic, people who reported to me that they were close contacts, and it was clear that they were out and about, they were travelling, they were clearly in shops, they were with other people. When these people, because they're symptomatic, number one, should be at home, and if they're close contacts, should also be at home and not mixing and mingling and potentially spreading the virus. And it's of real concern at this stage, when everybody's aware how bad the numbers are and how fast this disease is spreading, that people aren't adhering to the guidelines and aren't staying at home to protect everybody that they meet and everybody that they love.
Well, one of the things that we heard from that NEFRA briefing just an hour ago is that close contacts of confirmed cases will no longer be referred for testing because of the sheer volume of people that are coming forward for testing who are symptomatic. So close contacts, instead of being tested, are now going to be advised to restrict their movements for 14 days. What do you make of that, Ilona? Do you think people will do that, given your experience in terms of the people that you're dealing with?
I think people are still finding it hard to understand the difference between the isolation period of 10 days for those who test positive and the restricted movement period of 14 days for those who are close contacts. And they kind of wonder, well, why is it shorter for the person who has the disease? And they're not understanding that from the moment you meet somebody with that virus may have started to grow in your body, but it takes a period of time, that incubation period where it's developing, where it's growing, where it's turning you into somebody who can potentially be spreading it. And you may be spreading this virus long before you become symptomatic. And I suppose that's another thing that's really come home to us in the last day or two of calls from patients, how they're now realizing that they were in touch with someone who had no symptoms on Christmas Eve, on Christmas Day and Stephen's Day, and are suddenly now finding that those people had the virus and infected them unknowingly. So, you know, it's not that people are doing this deliberately, but it goes back to the advice that's come from public health and come from the Chief Medical Officer, that the only way to protect those around you is to stop meeting them and to limit your contacts, have your close bubble, but really now no visiting other houses. And this is Christmas Eve tonight, and notoriously a time people will be mingling and mixing normally, and we have to be sure that nobody is meeting, nobody is mingling, and that you're staying home with your family, and if you have symptoms, that you report those symptoms immediately to the GP antiviral service, because that too will be running things over the weekend, and get tested if you're advised to be tested.
And in terms of those symptoms then, Ilona, I suppose it was always going to be thus, wasn't it, as we approach winter time and it's the common cold season and a lot of people might be coming down with that. How similar are the COVID symptoms to those that you might experience with the cold, or is it very easy to tell when you have one and you don't have the other?
Well, I think that's true. And many people who I've rung today to tell them that they're positive, I've kind of asked everybody, are you surprised? And quite a few are. They're saying, you know, I had symptoms that were so mild, I'd never have thought of ringing a doctor. I had kind of nasal congestion. I had a very mild cough, but I had no temperature. Or people might say I had a bit of a temperature. So the reality of it is, you know, if you think it's a virus, and if you think you just got a virus, you've got to be sure that the virus isn't COVID. You can't diagnose that without having the test. So therefore, any symptoms such as any cough, and it doesn't have to be a bad cough, a cough that you're coughing all day. If you have a new cough or if you have a flare-up of your existing asthma or chronic bronchitis, you have to be tested. We're now finding also something that's not on the list, but I think every GP around the country is reporting it, severe nasal congestion. We're not talking about just sniffles with a mild head cold, but somebody who kind of thinks my sinuses are all blocked, I have pressure over them, I sound really congested and nasally when I'm talking. That very definitely is a presenting symptom in most of the patients that we've talked to.
Obviously, really? And is that new, Ilona? Because I haven't really heard that as being a symptom to watch out for.
Well, it's not on the list, but definitely even after tweeting it, many GPs have retweeted saying, absolutely, absolutely. And here in our surgery, more than half, because we're kind of auditing it, more than half of the people who've tested positive, even when you ring them, you kind of go, gosh, you're really bunged up, aren't you? And they're saying yes. So I think not just maybe a mild sniffle, but really you're congested, you feel the pressure in the sinuses, you sound nasally, and you're perhaps having lots of gunk going down the back of the throat that's triggering a cough as well. Ring and get advice on it, and I'd be advising that you get tested.
All right. I might turn to yourself then, Dr. Alan Gaffney, and we see that there's obviously an increase in patients presenting or ending up in ICU. Very somber and downcast briefing from the team on NPHET this afternoon in terms of where they see the trajectory of this virus going. I suppose in terms of the current situation, I know you've been speaking to your ICU colleagues elsewhere this afternoon. How many vacant ICU beds do we have available right now?
Good evening, Sarah. So we are looking at the hospital ICU bed information system, which is updated every day. We have 30 ICU beds available within the public system in the whole country. And to put that in context, we've got a total of 277 beds. So you can see that most of the patients in ICU at the moment actually don't have COVID, which is very different to back in March. Back in March, in lots of ways, we were nearly more prepared because we saw what was happening in Italy and London, and we were able to cancel planned surgeries. We were able to cancel outpatients. And when patients did come in then with COVID, we had a certain capacity to be able to deal with that. But I'd say in general, it would be fair to say that there's quite a lot of anxiety among the ICU community with the numbers of beds we have. And as you mentioned earlier, the trajectory of this really is moving in the wrong direction. With nearly doubling of the numbers of patients in ICU in only 4 or 5 days.
So what sort of capacity do we have there then? Because again, we saw one of the letters that was written by, the latest letter that was written by the Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Tony Houlihan, to the Health Minister, Stephen Donnelly, that was just released today. And again, some really stark figures in that letter. One of them, they've got a number of different projections, but under one projection, they're saying there will be 800 people with COVID-19 in hospital, not ICU, but in hospital by the 15th of January, and 1,300 by the end of January. Now, they don't mention ICU specifically, but I don't know, could you give us an estimate if we end up with 1,300 people at the end of January in hospital, what do you expect that looks like for ICU and can we deal with it?
Yes, so generally between 10 and 15% of patients that present to hospital with COVID end up coming to be looked after by us in ICU. So if you do the figures on that, then 10% would be 130 patients in ICU at that time. So you can see with a total bed number of 277, we would be okay under normal circumstances if all of those beds were empty. But of course, that isn't what happens in real life. In real life, those beds are occupied mostly, most of the time. In fact, most of our bed occupancy in Ireland runs up even above 100% a lot of the time. So it's a very worrying situation.
What about surge capacity then? I know that there's been a lot of talk about that throughout the pandemic. If our ICU bed capacity does get overcome, that there's extra beds perhaps in the private hospitals. Do you know about that or what might be available to us?
Yes, so there are a certain number of beds within the private hospital that the Department of Health has been working with the private system on. But really, the patients that present to us in ICU are very, very unwell. And when it comes to the point of talking about surge, we're not talking about moving into ICU beds that are there that are just unoccupied. What we're talking about is moving into the areas of the hospital that we can move into that would normally be used for other things. So, for example, we in Beaumont Hospital here had to move into the recovery area of theatre during the first wave. And that meant that theatre and operations couldn't continue as normal. So when we talk about surge in this situation, we're talking about displacing other important work that needs to continue in order to look after people who have disease that's so severe that they need intensive care. So really, it's a bad situation when you're talking about surge capacity.
I'll turn to yourself, Phil Nihay. Before you became INMO General Secretary, I know you were an intensive care nurse. What are you hearing at this point from nurses in hospitals around the country?
Again, I think similarly to what you've just been discussing, I think people are very worried in the hospital services and in the community services now, because we're trying to provide COVID services, non-COVID services, and we're scaling up to provide a very important vaccination programme. It's the same staff that will be providing all of these three services. All three services are very important. So I think from our members' point of view, and for other healthcare workers, it's the same. They are actually very tired. They've been dealing with this pandemic now and working with, restricted clothing, wearing protective clothing, which is very difficult to work in an environment like that, ongoing 12 hours a day, since March. So what they really need right now, I think, is an understanding of what can help. What can help is planning. I believe strongly that, when we hear surge, what that means is people have to redeploy who work in other areas. And we don't need that happening, in a panicked way. We need pre-planning of that. So we have been calling, and we called yesterday, on the HSE and the Department of Health to plan this, to curtail electives, to include some support from the private hospitals. Some of the elective work can be redirected to the private hospitals. There are about 50 ICU beds in the private sector which could be utilised for emergency essential surgery that would require post-operative ICU if that's appropriate. But the public hospital system cannot cope with everything. And with the increasing numbers, what we can plan, we must plan. And we must protect those that work in the system from the exhaustion that they're currently facing and a very, very high infection rate among healthcare workers. I'm very worried. We're very worried. We've been highlighting this for some time.
So like, are you saying, Phil, that you think the hospital system needs to go back to COVID services only?
I think we have to really look at it. And I was just looking at the press conference there where Dr. Colum Henry, on behalf of the HSE, was saying that they had to do that last week in some hospitals. And that is what's happening at the moment. When the outbreak happens, then the decision is made to curtail all services. What we're looking for is that would happen in advance, because we know now our hospitals are going to be under pressure and we have to plan for that so that staff can have the appropriate scaling up done in as controlled a manner as could possibly be available to us at a time like this.
Okay. I just want to ask you then finally about one of the other things that Dr. Tony Houlihan said in that letter to the Minister for Health. He was saying that the level 5 restrictions that have been brought in by the government today are a minimum and that they might not be enough to suppress the virus. He looked at schools and he talked about schools and he intimated that that might be a direction that we might have to go in terms of closing schools. I know that that was a big issue for healthcare workers the last time in terms of both creches and schools being closed because they couldn't find childcare for their own children. So if that were to happen again, are we in any ways better prepared to help nurses with childcare?
Well, unfortunately, we're not. We wrote to the HSD last evening. Most of the calls we received yesterday from members were from majority of our members, nurses, are women, and they have childcare responsibilities. And sometimes it's just not possible to rearrange all of those arrangements within 1 week. And schools play a big part in that for obvious reasons. Most of the calls we got yesterday were from members who have those concerns. We wrote to the HSE and I wrote to DPAR, to government today again, asking them to put provisions in place to allow people come to arrangements that doesn't just penalise people who have family responsibilities and who cannot arrive at alternative arrangements within a short notice period. So the arrangements that were in place in March and April, we're requesting that they are now reintroduced.
All right. We'll have to leave it there. But thank you all very much for joining us this evening. That's Phil Nihay, Dr. Alan Gaffney and Dr. Ilona Duffy.
Email drivetime@rte.ie.
Bottom line here is that if we do well and bring reproduction number below one, we still expect to see a peak of between 700 and 1,000 people in hospital with COVID-19 in early to mid-January. If we fail to suppress the virus, we would face an intolerable situation where numbers in hospital could increase as high as 1,500 to 2,000 people by the end of January, and that's simply untenable. So the bottom line here is we must suppress transmission. There is no alternative. Failure to suppress transmission leaves us in far too stark a scenario to be acceptable. We need to suppress transmission to protect each other from serious illness and to protect our health services and healthcare workers, and that's where the message comes from. We need to stay home. We need to carefully observe the public health guidance and restrictions. When we did this in April, it was because each and every one of us did this. So each and every one of us needs to do this now to prevent some of the really worrying scenarios that are projected by the modelling.
And that was Professor Philip Nolan speaking at that NEFA briefing earlier today.